From the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network studios in Des Moines, this is Iowa Ag Matters. I'm Riley Smith. In today's show, Dustin has a follow-up discussion with Iowa Corn Growers Association President Jolene Reason and joins Mark to provide more details on what he saw at Commodity Classic last week. And I talk with Practical Farmers of Iowa's Senior Research Manager Stefan Galens about two on-farm research trials. Now, here are your hosts for today, Mark Magnuson and Dustin Huffman.
Jam-packed show today here on Iowa Ag Matters with Andy Peterson on assignment. Dustin, glad to have you back from Commodity Classic. I know you saw a lot of cool stuff down there, and I think you even brought some things back. I know you brought us some gifts.
Well, yeah, I did, because our friends at agmarket.net always give us some nice swag for the partnership we have with them. But then I brought them the thing that was like the hot item this year was the giant foam cowboy hats at the Bayer booth. I had to bring two of them home for my kids. So
I saw you modeling one too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So of course they had to make the SNL jokes as well, but we'll have more about Commodity Classic later on in the program. But right now, Mark, you had a chance to talk with Joe Camp from Comstock about grain markets.
Joined today by Joe Camp of Comstock Investments for our opening discussion on the marketplace. Joe, what are we seeing taking place in the grains?
A bit of a softer tone overnight. And as we reopen here, we continued to see a bit of a bounce related to short covering, but as we expect, you know, short covering is in closing and of those bearish bets, profit taking from the large speculators is one thing, sustained new buying interest is another, and we don't quite have that yet. There were some signs of optimism to kick off the week in terms of demand, with a couple of daily flash sales popping up for some corn to Taiwan and soy meal sold to an unknown buyer. But on the flip side of that is some negativity, where we are talking a lot about China and those buyers really taking in quite a bit of corn from Ukraine, and probably still some soybeans from Brazil here, more so than from the U.S. right now. And that's something, as we head into this new month of March and on into the spring, that we're going to keep close track on as usual. But it's important that we see some return of demand from China here seasonally. Normally, they're going to be a bigger buyer of corn about this time of the year, but they do have other alternatives at the moment. I think we've gotten to a point where prices are cheap enough that they're going to take a better look at our market here going forward, but it just hasn't happened in a big enough way yet to, again, spark that big buying interest that would maybe flip the recent trend from bearish to bullish. At least, though, again, that we do have some form of a bottoming type of action here, some easing of the bearishness lately.
Joe, would Ukraine normally be an option for China to buy corn from? Would that be a viable, I guess, way for China to get a good deal? Or is that more of a case of now that's what's available and it is at a cheap price and that's where they're going?
A little bit of both. That the Ukraine exporter had developed a good relationship with China prior to the war breaking out. But then as of late, the war in Ukraine these last couple of years has only driven prices lower. Even with shorter production, it's something where we don't have quite as much disruption as we would maybe come to expect, given that there's an ongoing war in that region. But, you know, it's interesting that China's involved here because, you know, there's a lot of speculation that China has, you know, tacitly supported Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but only given the stipulation that Russia doesn't mess with exports, because China needs that, you know, that food and feed import, and for now they're getting it flowing pretty freely at the moment. So they're a big competitor, and we know too this last couple of years that China's tapped into the Brazilian corn supply in a bigger way. That even being the case, I think there's still enough demand that we should see some interest in U.S. corn going forward.
And we'll have more from Joe Camp at Comstock Investments coming up, talking about livestock a little later in the program. Right now, Andy Peterson stopped in with his three big Iowa Ag Matters.
Number three. A first ever location for a USDA trade mission in Angola, led by USDA Secretary Zogile Torres-Small, who says it was a success.
I witnessed challenges, opportunities, and perhaps most of all, the resiliency of Angolan people and Mozambican people. This was my first time leading an agribusiness trade mission, and I was pleased to have many U.S. exporters, cooperators, representatives from Kansas and Wisconsin join us as we work on expanding U.S. food and agriculture products and exports to Angola. In all, we had 9 U.S. companies, again, State Department of Agriculture representatives from Kansas and Wisconsin, and 8 USDA cooperators join us for the first ever trade mission to Angola.
She says it resulted in over 120 business-to-business meetings, and currently they're reporting about $18 million in projected 12-month sales as a result of the trip.
Number 2.
Wrapping up a successful commodity classic in Houston, our Iowa's corn growers as farmer leaders participated in implementing and establishing at the federal level beneficial policies for Iowa's corn farmers. President Jolene Reason says that ICGA delegates presented resolutions to set the framework for federal legislation efforts and directly influence our direction for years to come. In addition, the ICGA was rewarded the Numeric Growth Recognition Award, which took top honors for an increase in membership.
Number 1.
Taking over as Chief Executive Officer for the United Soybean Board, representing the 500,000 U.S. soybean farmers, which aims to create value through research, education, and promotional investments.
Sustainability, you know, it's not just a catchphrase, it's in everything that we do. And when the board of directors is talking about the future, it's connectivity, it's innovation, but it's also making sure that we've got the quality from the farm all the way through to the supply chain. You know, you can raise a soybean, but is the quality of that soybean at the highest that it can be? The protein of tomorrow and to meet the demands in the marketplace are critical. And probably one of the most important critical parts of that is our energy as well as our livestock. A lot of folks think of soybean and think of soy diesel, biodiesel, renewable diesel, but at the end of the day, our largest customers are poultry and livestock. We need to make sure that we're moving that meal that we produce in this country right through the value add of our animal agriculture.
He says there's good news ahead for Iowa and U.S. soy, which is great news in the face of struggling demand. I'm Andy Peterson. Those are your 3 Big Iowa Ag Matters.
If you thought soybeans were only used for tofu, think again. From tires and adhesives to next-generation asphalt, soy is used to create over 1,000 industrial products and counting. Thanks to your soy checkoff investment, the sky's the limit for Iowa soybean farmers. Oh, and speaking of skies, did I mention soy is also used in sustainable aviation fuel? The Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soy Checkoff, is driven to deliver for Iowa's 40,000 soybean farmers. Learn more at iasoybeans.com.
Well, as we said at the top of the show, lots to talk about from Commodity Classic, lots of policy discussion as well. We'll be talking with Jolene Reese of Iowa Corn here in just a little bit on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Tuesday here on Iowa Ag Matters, and Dustin back this week from Commodity Classic in Houston. And Dustin, I wanted to ask you, you know, when we think about the big national farm shows, we have Farm Progress Show in the fall, you've got the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville early in the year, and then Commodity Classic, it's kind of a mix of everything. You get to see new pieces of equipment, new practices that are being put into place, new crop protection products as well. So what was it about Commodity Classic this year that really caught your eye? What did you learn at Commodity Classic?
You know, there was a lot of great new technology, especially along those lines of machinery, crop protection, seed health. But there was so much focus this year on the fact of, well, first of all, where is the farm bill?
Yes.
You know, we had a chance to talk earlier this morning. I know you were sitting in on it doing the production work with Senator Joni Ernst, and we're going to be having some of that discussion coming up tomorrow on Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and here on Iowa Ag Matters. But, you know, the comment was, you know, we can't build an industry on something that has no foundation, meaning the farm bill, or the fact that we're building a new house on an old foundation, which means you build it on something that's based on old data. That was a big concern. And also trade. We have, as we talked yesterday a little bit with Andy, carryout looking to be big with corn and soybeans again after this year, and especially with South America getting back online with some of their weather woes. We got to figure out new demand for this corn and soybeans. We've looked at new ways of There's new initiatives to drive and incentivize new corn usage, as we talked about yesterday as well. But the thing that really, really stuck out was, and this was across the board, whether it was crop protection, whether it was seeds, fertilizer, what have you, it was, we've had a warm winter, and that's been pretty much standard around the country. It wasn't just, you know, in our area. We did have a little bit of winter, but we've had a pretty decent winter. So people are chomping at the bit. They're ready to go. The soil is warming up. In fact, we could probably look at the 6-inch soil temperatures and see that they're getting there, but they're not where they need to be. And everybody is basically trying to remind farmers, hey, pump the brakes. We still have a couple weeks of winter left, which I know we don't want to think about it, but it's the God's honest truth. We could get snow in April in Des Moines. It's not
very easy.
Not, I know, perish the thought, but it's still a possibility. And with the way old man winter and Mother Nature have been off their meds this year, anything's possible. And so everybody's saying, be careful. Make sure you're not getting in too much of a hurry. We've talked about early fertilizer applications. Is the ground ready for that yet? A lot of cases, the answer is still no. You're looking for that magic 50-55 temperature. We're not there yet. And so there's a lot of pump the brakes. Don't get too ahead of yourself. And make sure that when you do have that opportunity, you're ready to go. And also be thinking of that plan of attack. Do you have other options, whether that's maybe starting with soybeans first instead of corn? Maybe it's just, you know, whatever have you. Be ready. Make sure your plan is up to date and with new at the times. Get with your agronomist and talk about some of those things. And also, of course, there's a lot of pressure on the farm bill. I know Vilsack was at the Commodity Classic. People were interested in what he was going to have to say, and people were very wary about what EPA Administrator Regan was going to say at that event as he spoke as well. Well, we will have more from Commodity Classic coming up the next few days here on Iowa Ag Matters.
Ah, it's March. Even though, for the most part, this winter has been overly mild, there's still nothing quite like the excitement of planting season and new life and growth right around the corner. It's exhilarating. It's exciting. It's fun. It can be breathtaking. Also be a very dangerous time of year. Hi there, Andy Peterson, the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, with a quick reminder of a few things we can do to help reduce that risk during the very busy planting season, like thoroughly inspecting all equipment before going to fields. Try to rest up, as chronic fatigue can have the same effect on your body as drugs and alcohol, and slowed reaction times can be the difference sometimes between life or death. Planting season is a sprint, yet it's also important to do it right and be cognizant of what's happening around you and come home safely to your families each and every evening. We want to be around to have our discussions about the growing season after planting season has concluded. This message brought to you by your friends at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
You're listening to Iowa Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. After a cold day yesterday, nice to be in some warmer temperatures today, and most importantly to me anyway, blue skies all the way around here in central Iowa. We will have the basis report next, cash prices from around the state here on Iowa Ag Matters.
It's time to run down some of those elevator prices for you here on Iowa Ag Matters for this Tuesday. I'm Dustin Huffman. Seeing some of those elevator prices begin to lower once again after we've made the switch to the May contracts. A few more elevators showing sub $4 level corn here as of this morning, and a few more soybean bids back under $11 as well. Let's look at ADM in Burlington. They're 13 cents under on corn, 4.15. Soybeans 7 cents under at 11.42. Cargill and Eddyville, 15 cents under on corn, 4.13. New Co-op Algona, 20 cents under on corn, 4.08. Soybeans, 60 cents under at 10.89. Ag State Sheldon, 4 cents over on corn, there at 4.32. Soybeans, 73 cents under at 10.76. Ag State Alta, 21 cents under on corn, 4.07. Soybeans, 67 cents under at 10.82. At Cargill Cedar Rapids, they're even on corn today at 4.28. Soybeans, a nickel under, cash bid 11.44. Nexus Co-op Marble Rock, a dime under on corn, 4.18. Soybeans, 50 cents under at 10.99. Lincoln Way Ethanol Nevada, a dime under on corn, cash bid 4.18. ADM Des Moines, 12 cents under on soybeans, their cash bid 11.37. New Co-op Red Oak, 20 cents under on corn, 4.08. Soybeans, 50 cents under at 10.99. Mid-Iowa Cooperative Green Mountain, 35 cents under on corn, cash bid 393. Soybeans, 58 cents under at 1091. New Co-op Sheraton, 35 cents under on corn, 393. Soybeans, 55 cents under at 1094. Walk-On Feed Ranch, 25 cents under on corn, 403. Soybeans, 48 cents under at 1101. New Co-op Glidden, 20 cents under on corn, cash bid 408. Soybeans, 50 cents under at 1099. Innovative Ag Services of Farley, they're 21 cents under on corn. They're at $4.07. Soybeans, 42 cents under. They're at $11.07. Cargill Muscatine, their facility is closed for the season. They will open April 1st of this year. The office is still open for regular hours. Cash corn and soybean bids are subject to change without notice. Always check with your local elevator when making sales to obtain the most recent price. That's your basis report here on Iowa Ag Matters.
If you thought soybeans were only used for tofu, think again. From tires and adhesives to next-generation asphalt, soy is used to create over 1,000 industrial products and counting. Thanks to your soy checkoff investment, the sky's the limit for Iowa soybean farmers. Oh, and speaking of skies, did I mention soy is also used in sustainable aviation fuel? The Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soy Checkoff, is driven to deliver for Iowa's 40,000 soybean farmers. Learn more at iasoybeans.com.
More market information still to come here on Iowa Ag Matters, including a complete rundown of the midday numbers. Riley and Mark will have that for you coming up here in just a little bit. Don't forget about the free market podcast as well from Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Iowa Ag Matters returns next.
Time now to catch up with Iowa Corn Growers Association President Jolene Reeson. We had a chance to speak with Jolene at Commodity Classic last week. Now getting a chance to catch up after the meeting with the National Corn Growers Association.
All right, so we talked on Thursday morning. We kind of got a rundown of the things that you guys were most concerned with heading into this policy meeting on Saturday morning. You want to tell us a little bit about what came out of those meetings as far as obviously policy discussions? We talked about what was going on and what things Iowa was concerned with. So what kind of things that Iowa supported did get adopted here by the national group?
Well, there was, like I say, there was 33 resolutions. Pretty much all those got adopted, and it was anywhere from basically some wordsmithing, so some clarity in our policy book as to what the intent of the resolution was to. So one of the big discussions was a base acre reset, to which that majority rules, we necessarily in the state of Iowa didn't really want to support that very well, because it will financially be a big hit in our state for our farmers, because we have a lot of corn base acres. So anyway, but you know what, they're doing the right thing. So it also, on those base acres, takes into account acres that have base on them that may not be in production. People are still getting paid on that. So that, I guess, was probably the bigger sticking point, was just to make sure that those acres that are getting paid are actually being farmed. So that was probably the biggest fix as far as for that resolution. We also talked about sustainable aviation fuel and our support of that, SAE. That's going to be huge coming down the road. And with that resolution, it was more how are we going to handle the GREET model, because that is still being studied by the EPA, and they are talking that they might be doing some tweaks to it. And so we were just concerned that to make sure that those tweaks are not detrimental to what we do for farming out here, and that it is going to be something good for sustainable aviation fuel moving forward.
I know another thing we talked about, Jolene, was talking about EVs and, you know, how they're playing out. And I know RINs were a part of that, those e-RINs. Talk a little bit about what happened there. And I know Iowa was supporting a part of that program as well.
Yeah, we brought that resolution forward that we just, I'm sorry, the state of Iowa, supporting electric vehicles is just not a good thing for the state of Iowa, especially when you're the number one ethanol producing and the number one corn producing state in the United States. So, and also I think a lot of people saw this winter when we had that bitter cold snap, I think the people that bought Teslas were definitely not farmers, because farmers know when it gets super cold what it does to our batteries. Did the same thing to the electric vehicles, and it was not a good outcome for them. So I the EVs have a fit someplace, just not feeling it here in the Midwest.
And so how did that RIN program work, though? Maybe explain to some of our followers that maybe aren't quite sure what the difference between e-RINs and the normal RINs we're used to seeing with biofuels.
Well, so e-RINs was going to allow electric vehicles to get the same type of buy-in that the RINs are. So it would help to basically saying that they're as sustainable, if not maybe more sustainable than what our ethanol is, to which is not the case.
And again, we thank the Iowa Corn Growers Association for their sponsorship of our trip down to Commodity Classic and all of the content we're bringing back from there. And of course, interesting to hear how those topics are going to play out. Next is the three big Iowa Ag Matters. Andy Peterson standing by.
Number three.
A first ever location for a USDA trade mission, Angola, led by USDA Secretary Zogiel Torres-Small, who says it was a success.
I witnessed challenges, opportunities, and perhaps most of all, the resiliency of Angolan people and Mozambique people. This was my first time leading an agribusiness trade mission, and I was pleased to have many U.S. exporters, cooperators, representatives from Kansas and Wisconsin join us as we work on expanding U.S. food and agriculture products and exports to Angola. In all, we had 9 U.S. companies, again, State Department of Agriculture representatives from Kansas and Wisconsin, and 8 USDA cooperators join us for the first ever trade mission to Angola.
She says it resulted in over 120 business-to-business meetings, and currently they're reporting about $18 million in projected 12-month sales as a result of the trip.
Number two.
Wrapping up a successful Commodity Classic in Houston, our Iowa's corn growers as farmer leaders participated in implementing and establishing at the federal level beneficial policies for Iowa's corn farmers. President Jolene Reason says that ICGA delegates presented resolutions to set the framework for federal legislation efforts and directly influence our direction for years to come. In addition, the ICGA was rewarded the Numeric Growth Recognition Award, which took top honors for an increase in membership.
Number one.
Taking over as Chief Executive Officer for the United Soybean Board, representing the 500,000 U.S. soybean farmers, which aims to create value through research, education, and promotional investments.
Sustainability, you know, it's not just a catchphrase, it's in everything that we do. And when the board of directors is talking about the future, it's connectivity, it's innovation, but it's also making sure that we've got the quality from the farm all the way through to the supply chain. You know, you can raise a soybean, but is the quality of that soybean at the highest that it can be? The protein of tomorrow and to meet the demands in the marketplace are critical. And probably one of the most important critical parts of that is our energy as well as our livestock. A lot of folks think of soybean and think of soy diesel, biodiesel, renewable diesel, but at the end of the day, our largest customers are poultry and livestock. We need to make sure that we're moving that meal that we produce in this country right through the value add of our animal agriculture.
He says there's good news ahead for Iowa and U.S. soy, which is great news in the face of struggling demand. I'm Andy Peterson. Those are your three big Iowa Ag Matters.
If you thought soybeans were only used for tofu, think again. From tires and adhesives to next-generation asphalt, soy is used to create over 1,000 industrial products and counting. Thanks to your soy checkoff investment, the sky's the limit for Iowa soybean farmers. Oh, and speaking of skies, did I mention soy is also used in sustainable aviation fuel? The Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soy Checkoff, is driven to deliver for Iowa's 40,000 soybean farmers. Learn more at iasoybeans.com.
Well, we're going to take a look at those midday numbers next as the grain and livestock markets are traveling right along throughout the day. Riley and Mark are going to have that for you next on Iowa Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
This is the midday market update on Iowa Ag Matters. I'm Mark Magnuson. Joined today by Brian Doherty of Total Farm Marketing for our midday market discussion. Brian, it seems like we've turned to the negative here today after the first trading day of the week last on Monday, rather. What are we seeing taking place in the grains today?
Yeah, so they call it turnaround Tuesday. Maybe there's a reason, but down about 3 cents in corn, about a nickel in beans, but wheat really under some pressure today, down about five. Some likely technical selling there. I'm going to say maybe a little better forecast too for some of the winter wheat areas. And just the lack of positive news, we continue to see where Russia offers wheat out below market price. And anyway, wheat's under pressure. If I jump over to livestock quick, mixed in the cattle. Just steady to a little higher in the April contract, down about 5 to 15 in the deferred months. Feeders mixed. Hogs off a dollar in the front months. And then milk markets have turned weaker after some gains early in the session, down about 10 to 18 points right now.
Thanks, Mark. We're taking a look now at what's going on in the livestock markets here at midday. All is quiet in cattle country this morning with bids and asking prices yet to be established. Significant trade volume will likely be delayed until Wednesday or later. Beef cutouts are expected to be mixed with light to moderate box movement. So taking a look then at how things ended yesterday and a little bit from last week, the USDA confirmed light Friday cash action for cattle near 183 to 184, matching the bulk of the week's business. The CME feeder cattle index was at 246.38 for March 1st. Wholesale boxed beef prices were mixed on Monday afternoon as choice increased by $1.02 and select fell by 57 cents. USDA reported FI cattle slaughter at 116,000 head from 122,000 head last week and 124.6 thousand during the same Monday last year. In the hog market yesterday, the national average base hog price increased by $1.49 to $74.16. CME lean hog index was 11 cents higher on February 29th to $80.26. Pork carcass cutout value dropped by $1.63 to $92.82 on Monday afternoon. USDA reported the FI pork slaughter at 493,000 head compared to 492,000 head last week, and up from 465.7 thousand during the same week last year. We'll look at the numbers next.
Now that the calendar shows March, prep for the 2024 planting season is well upon us, and we'd like to remind you of a few extra steps to help reduce the safety risk during the heat of that planting season. There's the obvious: make sure all that safety equipment is in proper working order as part of your routine preparations, but also try to rest up, as chronic fatigue can have the same effect on your body as drugs and alcohol, and slowed reaction times can be dangerous. This message furnished by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
At midday, May corn is down 4 even at 426 even. May soybeans down 5 and a quarter at 1149 and 3 quarters. May soybean meal down $1.50 at 332 even. May soybean oil down 2 pennies at 45.15. Chicago wheat down 14 and 3 quarters at 549 and a quarter. Minneapolis wheat down 9 even at 650 and a half. Kansas City hard red wheat down 9 and a half at 570 and 3 quarters. And May oats down 1 and 3 quarters at 366 and 3 quarters. On the Merck, April live cattle up 20 cents at 186.87. March feeder cattle down 17 cents at 251.37. April lean hogs down $1.42 at 84.85. April pork cutout down 87 cents at 92.50. And Class 3 milk down 13 cents at 16.57. That was a check of the midday markets on Iowa Ag Matters. I'm Mark Magnuson.
Well, as promised, we're going to get some more livestock analysis here on Iowa Ag Matters. Joe Kemp of Comstock Investments rejoining Mark Magnuson to talk about what we're seeing driving those cattle and hogs.
Let's flip over to the other side of the ag marketplace in the livestock complex. What are we seeing there?
Well, for the cattle, one day down, the next day up, and that's what we're looking at now with a rebound so far in this early session. And that would be an extension of last week, too, where we were really all over the place. In some ways, consolidating on these recent highs, we had such a run for this rebound up from the December lows, where we were, you know, looking at live cattle futures up some $22-$23 from their recent lows, but yet still off the all-time highs by 10 or 11 bucks. And so we've had that really solid recovery, but at this point, you know, it's the opposite of the grains to some extent, where the speculators, having been so short in this market, are taking some profit by closing out shorts and being light buyers. Whereas in the livestock, cattle and hogs included, The hedge funds have been net buyers for 6 weeks straight on hogs, live cattle, and feeder cattle futures. But, you know, now they're at a point where maybe seeing some signs of a topping type of action that would encourage them to liquidate those positions, or at least part of them. So back, though, to strength here, fundamentally, we've still got a positive picture when you think about tight fed cattle supplies, still really robust demand from all levels, and you know, a pretty good looking technical picture overall.
Joe, what are your thoughts on the overall footing right now for the hog market and where we were just a short time ago, when I'm thinking, you know, a month or two ago?
Yeah, when you look at the rebound we've had over that time frame, we're really seeing a shift in the overall fundamental outlook here that fits with, you know, not anything that was unexpected. The market suffered when, you know, hog supplies were building, and they're still relatively abundant in the near term, but yet it's a futures market, and the forward outlook is for numbers to tighten into the summer months. And seasonally, it's expected that the cash price is going to ramp up into at least the spring, and that's so far been something that has occurred. And so you have these summer months now above $100 and really pricing in a pretty bullish look here. It fits too, like we mentioned, with the cattle and touched on with the hogs. The speculators are pretty bullish here in this market, and it's not just about consumer demand being sustained. It's also about export demand for pork, you know, expected to expand here into this new 2024 year to another record level. So all pretty bullish factors.
Now that the calendar shows March, prep for the 2024 planting season is well upon us. And we'd like to remind you of a few extra steps to help reduce the safety risk during the heat of that planting season. There's the obvious: make sure all that safety equipment is in proper working order as part of your routine preparations. But also try to rest up, as chronic fatigue can have the same effect on your body as drugs and alcohol, and slowed reaction times can be dangerous. This message furnished by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Coming up on the show, Riley Smith gets the chance to catch up with Stephen Galens from Practical Farmers of Iowa, learning about two on-farm research trials that are going to take place, and applications open now for those trials. That's with Practical Farmers of Iowa next here on Iowa Ag Matters. It's Iowa Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, and it is time now for Riley Smith's interview with Stephen Galens. He is with Practical Farmers of Iowa. They have two on-farm research trials coming up, and applications now open for those trials. And Riley, speaking with Stephen, finds out what that trial would mean for a farmer, what they would be getting into if they sign up for the program.
You guys have a couple of on-farm research trials coming up, or actually the enrollment is open right now for both of these trials. First off, tell us a little bit about why it's beneficial for farmers to get involved in on-farm research trials like this.
Yeah, sure thing, Riley. We find that farmers make all kinds of investments and decisions on the farm, but they don't always have scientific data from their own fields to either inform those decisions or help them make those decisions about whatever they're kind of curious about. And historically, we found at Practical Farmers that by taking part in on-farm research trials, farmers have a chance to put things to the test scientifically. And in this case, we are focusing in on soil health investments on the farm.
So then taking a look at both of these trials, we'll start off with the first one listed here, and that's can we reduce nitrogen rates to corn and improve return on investment? Tell us a little bit about this trial and what exactly you know, we're looking for out of this data.
Sure. Well, we're looking for farmers basically to compare their typical nitrogen fertilizer rate to a reduced rate of their choosing. And really it's based on, you know, the kind of long-term investments they've been making to the farm in terms of soil health. We know that practices like cover crops or diversified rotations help to keep soil in place, keep nutrients in place, and those are long-term benefits. What we're also starting to see evidence of, or see farmers curious about, is that can those practices also make the fields more fertile and in less need of added synthetic inputs like nitrogen fertilizer? So we devised this really simple strip trial with farmers to put their soil health to the test, as it were. Can they get by with a little less fertilizer, which is good for their pocketbook, returns, and for environmental implications?
Absolutely. And then looking at the other trial on do cover crops increase the number of days suitable for field work? You know, cover cropping is a huge thing. You know, whenever I'm visiting you guys at field events or other events, cover crops, a huge topic of discussion. So tell us a little bit on what we're trying to figure out from this study as well.
Yeah. This is another way that we're kind of putting, in this case, cover crops to the test. We know all the kinds of benefits that we can perceive with our eyes and maybe backed up by scientific literature. But one thing that we've been hearing, maybe you heard it too, Riley, because you've been visiting with Practical Farmers for a few years, is that the people who've been using cover crops for a number of years, they've been starting to tell us and some of my colleagues that, you know, they can get into the field a little earlier than their neighbors or than the typical farmer in their neighborhood. And they're maybe able to get in the harvest time and harvest when other fields are a little too wet or mucky. And so we devised with some of our farmer members a way to kind of put that hypothesis or that kind of anecdote to the test. Every week, the USDA and the Iowa Department of Agriculture comes out with a report. Maybe you're familiar with that, or the listeners are familiar with that, that report the number of days that were suitable for field work the previous week. How many days could you get in to the field and do field work? And so we're helping farmers to survey their own fields in the same manner to see, well, are those who are using cover crops over the long term able to beat that kind of state or that regional average? And we're really kind of curious to see if these stories that the people have been telling us are really going to be borne out with some of these data that we'll be collecting with the farmers themselves from their fields. Really exciting.
All right. Lots of great things for producers to think about. Enrollment for these trials is open right now. How long will that be open for, and how can farmers kind of get involved with that application process?
Yeah. We've got it open for all the way through early April. April 10 is kind of the deadline we've stated for these two projects. So we're still actively taking people who are interested in this. And the best way to get more information or to find our kind of sign-up form is to go to our website. And that is practicalfarmers.org. Practical Farmers is one word, practicalfarmers.org.
Now that the calendar shows March, prep for the 2024 planting season is well upon us, and we'd like to remind you of a few extra steps to help reduce the safety risk during the heat of that planting season. There's the obvious: make sure all that safety equipment is in proper working order as part of your routine preparations, but also try to rest up, as chronic fatigue can have the same effect on your body as drugs and alcohol, and slowed reaction times can be dangerous. This message, furnished by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
And just like that, we're at the end of another busy episode of Iowa Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Of course, find all our content online, iowaagnet.com. Sign up for the free e-newsletter there. Also can find our podcasts and the replays of shows like Weekend Ag Matters. And also sign up for our marketing podcast through Google, Amazon, Apple, Spotify, and Podbean. Thanks to Mark, thanks to Riley, and thanks to you for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. This has been Iowa Ag Matters.